Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Men's Monday here on Mind Talk. Every Monday, you and I have the opportunity to meet a man who has agreed to share his story, his journey with us. And today is certainly no different. On a lovely Saturday morning in May of 2007, Mark Moore suffered two strokes and was put into a medically induced coma for a month. That May 7th was the beginning of Mark's experience with a stroke. Mark, you have been described as the chief operating officer and co-owner of Segovia, which is a leading provider of global internet protocol services to the U.S. Defense Department. So you were really out there in your world with your business acumen, doing what you loved to do. And then in something of an instant, your life was changed. Tell us about May 2007, and absolutely welcome to Mind Talk. I'm so pleased to have you here.
Thank you for having me. And you are correct. And as I usually, when I talk to people and I tell them the exact date, people go, "You remember the exact date?" And I go, "Absolutely. May 12th, 2007, the Saturday before Mother's Day in 2007, while going to coach my son's baseball practice, as we were going to the field, Dr. Brewer, I started feeling that I was losing my equilibrium and I was having difficulty walking and balancing myself. But I'll be honest with you, I wasn't overly concerned because I was 46 at the time. I did not have high blood pressure. I didn't have high cholesterol. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I'm not diabetic, and I wasn't obese. So to be honest with you, I wasn't overly concerned that this had anything to do with a stroke. It was the first thing from my mind. I simply thought that it was an unusually hot day that year in early May, and I had not eaten breakfast, and I thought, maybe the fact that I haven't eaten breakfast, it's kind of hot out here. When I get to the dugout, I'll drink some water, and I'll feel okay. And to my point, Dr. Brewer, that I wasn't only concerned that it was any serious from a medical standpoint, I was more concerned that I was coaching a bunch of 15-year-old boys, and I didn't want their parents to think that their son's coach had been drinking on a Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock.
That would have not been a good thing.
It would have been a good thing. So, and since I was losing my balance, what I literally did was, so I was walking to the dugout, I stopped, got down to one knee, untied my baseball shoes and retied them, switched knees, untied the other one and retied it, and hoping that when I got back up, I would feel a little bit better. And when I stood up, Dr. Brewer, I felt a little bit better, and I was able to make it to the dugout.
You were clearly a man on a mission that morning.
Yes, yes. As I wrote in the book, I'm a type A personality for all the good and bad. And I did not think anything was seriously ill because I was 46. And I went to visit my doctor on a regular basis, got physicals, and was in excellent health. And absolutely did not think there was anything wrong. Got to the dugout and said, "I'll just drink some water and hopefully I'll feel a little bit better." And Dr. Brewer, I got to the dugout, drank some water, and then I proceeded, and this is where I want listeners to learn from the mistakes I made. I proceeded to coach baseball practice for 2 hours. And I remember afterwards, Dr. Brewer, I spoke to my doctor. I go, "Well, how was I able to do that?" And like, "That was just your adrenaline flowing." He goes, "It just pushed you through all the symptoms," because I'll be honest with you, Dr. Brewer, I did not feel anything when I got on the field. I was running the base paths. I was doing pitching practice, batting practice, infield practice, outfield practice with a bunch of 15-year-olds for 2 hours, and I felt okay. It wasn't until after the 2 hours when I walked off the field, Dr. Brewer, I realized the symptoms were still there, and they came on. They were getting worse the minute I walked off the field.
Now, Mark, you mentioned your book, and the name of the book is A Stroke of Faith, A Stroke Survivor's Story of a Second Chance at Living a Life of Significance. Almost in an instant, and I know it wasn't an instant, but almost in an instant, you were transformed from this powerhouse of a businessman who had raised millions of dollars, had a thriving company, quite financially articulate, if you will, and you changed from that to a recovering patient at one point who was puzzled about how to fill in the blank areas of a check. I mean, talk about going from zero to 360, or perhaps from 360 to almost zero. What an incredible, powerful change you went through as you were going through the process and the steps of survival. And you say it's only by a miracle that you were even here today surviving.
That is correct, Dr. Boo. And you're right. It was a miracle. That particular day, going back to when coaching baseball practice, when I after we left baseball practice, it was the Saturday before Mother's Day, and I wanted my son to actually purchase a Mother's Day card for his mother, because up to that point, Dr. Boo, my son was 15. Up to that point, I would always buy the Mother's Day cards, and I would give them to him, and then he would sign his name and give it to his mother. But he was 15 now, and I'm like, you can pick out your own card. So we went to it was a Hallmark store on the way home. We stopped at the Hallmark store. He picked out the card. By the time we were walking into the store, Dr. Brewer, and this was the first time I told him, I'm like, I'm not feeling too well. I go, we're going to see how we feel when we get out the store. And I may have to call your mother to come get you. And you're right, Dr. Brewer, by the time I got out that store, the symptoms had really progressed. I was having extreme difficulty walking, and I knew there was no way I could drive home. And I told my then 15-year-old son, I can't drive home. I'm going to have to call your mother to come get you. And I called my wife and said, hey, look, I need you to come get Marcus, and I need you to call the ambulance and have them come get me. And they took me to the hospital, and you're right. After getting to the hospital, they proceeded to tell me that I had suffered a stroke. Initially, they thought it was a mini stroke, but eventually they determined that it was a full-blown stroke. And you're right, Dr. Brewer, at the end of that process, I found myself unable to walk. Had difficulty talking initially, lost the use of my left side, couldn't remember your name, Dr. Brewer. Within 5 minutes of learning your name, I would have forgotten your name. It's a light, as you said, it seemed like an instant when you're living it. It seems like it was overnight. Like one night everything was fine, the next night the whole life had changed.
You know, just as you mentioned your wife, and just as an aside, that was certainly something of a lovely love story. She was your first love, yes?
That's correct. I was very fortunate. I met my wife in the 10th grade in high school there in New York City. We were in band class together. That was the first time I met her. We didn't start dating until about 11th grade, and we've been together ever since. And it was very fortunate for me. She went on to become a registered nurse. And that was fortunate because as I went through this process, you know, the loving and the nursing, her nursing expertise absolutely paid dividends, because when I went to the hospital, I told you, they misdiagnosed my condition originally. They thought it was a mini stroke. So after that first Saturday when I had that stroke, the Monday after Mother's Day while still in the hospital, I had a second stroke that they didn't realize, the nurses did not realize what was going on. It was only because of my wife's insistence. As she was sitting there talking to me, she goes, you all of a sudden went very quiet. You fell asleep and stopped talking to me. And I asked the nurse, there's something wrong with my husband. Can you please take him downstairs and run a scan? Because they were hesitant at first, because it wasn't until the third time. I'm like, please, I'll tell you, there's something wrong with my husband. Can you take him downstairs and run a scan? When they finally did, they realized that, in fact, I was having a second stroke, and an artery in the brain had dissected and was leaching blood into the brain, and it was putting pressure on the brain. And that's when a neurosurgeon just happened to be walking by and saw the scan and realized that they needed to perform emergency brain surgery on me at that moment to save my life.
Talk about a set of miracles. That was yet another miracle. I mean, how often do you hear about it happened to be the doctor who you needed, who happened to be walking by, who happened to glance at your scans and said, oh, my goodness, we need to do something right now. I don't know that that ever happens.
And you're absolutely right. And hence the title of the book, A Stroke of Faith, as people and how that – I was talking to someone, Dr. Brewer, and someone had told me, as I'm describing that story, they're like, man, what a stroke of luck. and Dr. Brewer, like you. And when the person said, I wasn't offended by the statement, Dr. Brewer, but as they said, I listened, I'm like, it wasn't a stroke of luck, more a stroke of faith, because, you know, clearly, you know, God put everyone there for a reason, right? You know, and I go back, I go, the fact that I was able to meet my lovely wife in the 10th grade, right? And that wasn't by chance. That was by God's direction. The doctor walking by, that was God's direction. So the strokes were simply God's way of reaching me. So it really was a stroke of faith. And I will tell you what happened with my medical condition in 2007. It simply strengthened and renewed my faith.
You, at one point, talked about your faith. And, you know, you had kind of the kind of faith that a lot of people have, sort of like Sunday morning faith.
That's correct.
You were there on Sunday for a couple of hours. You were in the church. You were doing what you do in church. And then after that, you were back to a very busy, very stressful, although I think it sounds like you enjoyed it, life. And that's just, it was 2 hours on Sundays, and that was it.
And Dr. Brewer, you're so right. As I go around the country talking to people, how I describe it was, you know, in my view, Sunday was God's day. He was in control on Sunday. But the other 6 days, I was in control. Because you're right, Dr. Bill. Prior to my illness in 2007, you know, I went to church every Sunday. Because I'll talk to people, and they're like, but Mark, you went to church every Sunday. And I'm like, yes, I did. But it really requires to do more than just going to church every Sunday. And it's funny, as I went through this process, and we're very active in our church now, and I was talking to my pastor, you know, who's one day, he's like, he goes, hey, did you come see us back then? And I'm like, no, I did not. Pastor, I go, I showed up on Sundays for service, and I went home, and I wasn't active in Bible study. I wasn't active in any ministries. I wouldn't dare to reach out to the church when I was going through those struggles of mine, because I wasn't active in the church. You know, today we are active. Because of the obviously the experience in 2007, when you feel God's presence, then your life really is changed. And as I said, the strokes and the medical dish simply renewed and strengthened my faith.
And you know, for so many people, it would have that experience, but really, perhaps for more people, it would have the reverse experience. There would be a lot of anger, a lot of why me, and turning or enhancing one's experience with the faith, with your faith, would not have necessarily been the route that people would go.
And Dr. Brewer, you are right, and I'll tell you, and I didn't get there immediately either. So, and I want people to realize, you know, it took time for me to get there, because initially those emotions you talked about, I went through those. You know, they talk about anger and denial and fear, and I went through all of those. And you will go, and I should say, you know, I went through them. But eventually I got to the point where in the medical profession, they talk about getting to the point where you have acceptance and hope in order to bring about a full recovery. And what I tell people, for me, acceptance was really surrendering, and hope was really placing my faith in God. But you're right, Doctor. Oh, I went through those, and I don't want anyone to think I didn't. There were times where, matter of fact, I was talking to someone last week. I go, look, guys, when I wasn't angry, I was in denial. And when I was in denial, I was scared. And when I wasn't scared, I was angry. And when I wasn't angry, I was in denial. And when I was in denial, I was scared. So you're right. You go through those emotions. But prayerfully and hopefully, Dr. Brewer, that as you go through that walk with God, hopefully, prayerfully, you will get to the point where you realize, you know, I need to strengthen my faith and place a trust and belief in someone higher.
So you needed to really embrace relying on a higher power, relying on more than just Mark. Although Mark was quite the powerhouse.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was talking to someone the other day, and so there were many times, Dr. Brewer, you know, I wanted to quit. I didn't want to work hard to recover. Because as you said earlier, you know, I was 46. You know, I raised $2 billion. I had successfully built 5 companies, sold 3 companies. You know, this was all very difficult to take for me, right? And as I struggled with the fact that I lost the use of my left side. I couldn't walk. I couldn't talk initially. I couldn't remember anyone's name. I couldn't tie my shoe. I couldn't write a check. I couldn't balance getting in the shower. I had difficulty putting an under all that. I was like, man, do I really want to go through all this? And Dr. Brewer, there were many times I didn't want to do it. But each time I didn't want to do it, I'll be answered. God sent the message to say, look, you know, just trust me. And I'll tell you, there was one time, Dr. Brewer, and I really want listeners to understand, you know, I was not there initially, but eventually I got there. As we were going to rehab, and my wife would drive me to rehab, I had to go to outpatient rehab for 2 months, 3 days a week, 4 hours a day. And I'm going to rehab, Dr. Brewer. I can't walk. I can't use my left side. You know, and the progress is slow. It's a slow progress recovering from a stroke. So we're in this maybe 3 days. You know, Dr. Brewer, I tell people the best way to describe it is, I'm like, okay, I've been here 3 days. You know, why am I still in this wheelchair, right? I'm like, I should be walking by now. And I was not feeling particularly well. And as she was driving me home one day, I said to my wife, I go, you know, this ain't working. And she looks at me and goes, what are you talking about? I'm like, this ain't working. And Dr. Brewer, to your point, instead of going to my faith, I went to where I was comfortable. I went back, which was the business world.
Right.
And so I told my wife, I go, I got to make changes. I need to switch up the physical therapist. I need to switch up the occupational therapist. And I need to switch up the speech therapist. So, Dr. Brewer, you know, I was firing everybody, right? In the business world, when things don't work, that's what we make changes.
You get
so
rid of
them. Changes. Right? I'm like, I'm getting rid of them. My wonderful wife, God bless it, she pulls the car over and she goes, what are you talking about? I'm like, they don't understand me. I'm not going to get better, Brian. And she goes, first of all, she goes, how do you know that God didn't allow you to have two strokes so you could show people you could recover from two strokes? And I was talking to someone recently, and they go, that did it. I go, no, that didn't do it. I go, because I sat there, and I thought, oh, she's just trying to shut me up. I go, it was the next thing she said, Dr. Brewer. She goes, Mark, you need to trust God. And Dr. Brewer, and, you know, I needed to hear that. And I'm like, you know, she's right. I really need to trust him. And so to your earlier point, you know, there were multiple times when I wanted to quit on my stuff. But I tell you, when I wanted to quit, God would send someone my way, and the message was quite simply, just trust me. You know, in no way, and I tell people, you know, I never had any belief that I would walk again. I didn't think I would go back to work again. I didn't even think I would be able to use my left side again. All I heard was saying, trust me. And to your point, Dr. Brewer, I'm like, you know what? I had to give, and it gets back to your early point about giving up control and surrendering. I needed to just surrender. But Dr. Brewer, I'll tell you this. The minute I got to that point where I realized I needed to surrender, the recovery looked a lot different. So now I'm still this monumental mountain that I couldn't climb. Now all of a sudden, I wasn't worried about it, and it seemed like it was just an anthill. I did what I could, and I left the rest to God.
It really is extraordinary, all the things that you went through. And extraordinary, too, that your wife was with you every step of the way. I mean, we both know that there are some situations when a crisis actually pulls families apart. But that was not at all your experience.
Not at all, Dr. Bill. And you're absolutely right. As we went through the process, to your point, while I was in the hospital for those 6 weeks and the 4 weeks in that medically-induced coma, as I think I mentioned earlier, my wife slept in the hospital room every night, slept in a chair or laid on the sofa next to me just to make sure she was there to check on me every night. And then after 6 weeks of being a hospitalization, I went through 2 months of outpatient rehabilitation. As I told you, we had to drive down to Mount Vernon Hospital, which is the best if you had a traumatic brain injury, hospital to go to in the country, not just this region of the country. She would drive me there, you know, 3 days a week. You know, we'd be down there for 4 hours a day, and I would have probably two sessions every day between physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy. There would be two every day and 3 days a week. And Dr. Brewer, she would sit in those sessions for an hour, sat in the back of the room, never said anything while I sat up front with my therapist, struggling to use my left side again, struggling to walk again, struggling to write my name and fill out checks and speak and all the things. And all she did was sit in the back of this room for 60 minutes and said nothing. And I tell people, I go, if that doesn't tell you, you know, how wonderful a spouse can be in this process, because, I mean, I tell, I don't know how you did it. I go, you just sat in the back room and didn't say anything. But it was wonderful because, you know, it was a brain injury. And it takes the brain, it's like anything else. The brain has to heal, and it can heal, and you can get back, and all the capabilities that, in fact, came back. But it was injured at that point. So as I went through that recovery, Dr. Brewer, here's the benefits of her sitting in the back of that room. Sometimes the therapist was telling me things, and I was missing them because I had this brain injury. So, you know, I did not comprehend it correctly. So when we got home, and I would say something, and I would be doing something, she's like, well, I don't think that's what they said. And I'm like, really? And I'm like, you know, I had a brain injury. So you know, if you have a significant other that can be a part of that process, then Dr. Brewer, I would say, absolutely, that's a wonderful thing. And I tell people, and what I tell you, Dr. Brewer, is I went through this thing, you know, my wife and our kids, it wasn't just our dad had a stroke, it was our family had a stroke. So they made it a process, to your point. And Dr. Brewer, you said something earlier, and I was absolutely surprised. When we went through this, and my therapist would see Brenda there every day, and they're like, hey, your wife's here every day? I'm like, yeah. And this was the first time I heard it, and you just mentioned it, Dr. Brewer. I didn't know. They go, you know, Mark, in most instances, when couples go through a life-altering illness like this, it goes, it puts such a strain on the marriage.
Absolutely.
A lot of marriages fail because of this.
Mark, we're going to take a break. Mark, let's take a break right here, and then we come back. We're going to pick up because I want to hear more about this wife of yours.
No problem.
All righty, folks, this is Pamela Brewer, and you're listening to a conversation with Mark Moore, author of A Stroke of Faith. We'll be back in a moment. I'd like to share a bit of the foreword to A Stroke of Faith that was written by Knox Singleton, Chief Executive Officer of the Inova Health System in Falls Church, Virginia. And he says that some of Mark's story is written by the incredible physicians, nurses, therapists, and other health professionals who set to work using the best that science had to offer to bring about the restoration of a purposeful, impactful life. And some of the story is written by Mark's wife, Brenda, who built and decorated the infrastructure of human support without which nothing else would have worked. This is indeed a story of miracles. It is a story that teaches us our part in miracles and how those who find themselves in a similar place can find a road to recovery that will please both God and man. Margie, we're talking about your wife, and clearly she was a part of the master plan for you. How often do you meet someone and they have the same last name that you do?
Not very often.
If she wouldn't have had to change any initials anywhere. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
That is pretty. It's funny how we met, and it's funny about a story, Dr. Girl, we was in high school. We met in band class. And the first day in band class, Dr. Bill, you know what they do? They put you in alphabetical order. So she was sitting right next to me, and that's how we initially met, because we had the same last name. And because I'll be honest with you, I was pretty shy back then. I probably would never have spoke to her, except for she was sitting right next to me, and we both had the same last name, and we spoke. And then that opened the door, and then we continued to talk, and eventually realized we had quite a bit in common.
Mark, we've been talking about a tiny bit of what your childhood was like, but certainly not much. We've really, up to this point in our conversation today, we've really been focusing on the extraordinary business successes that you've enjoyed. But that's not where you came from. You actually lived in, you make the point in your book that you lived in a household of 10 people living in an 800 square foot wooden home. Tell us a little bit about you as a little one, 10 in a house, and African-American young boy, what your father taught you.
You know, thank you, Dr. Bill. And you're right. We're from, you know, Jamaica, Queens, and it's an urban area, and, you know, certainly low income. But I will tell you, and I've told people many times, I never realized when I was a young boy that we didn't have money. And it wasn't until I got much older and I realized, you know, I guess we were considered poor. We didn't have much money. But I will tell you, my parents, a loving home, displayed love to us. And let us know that it's important to love one another. It's important to care for your brothers and sisters. And it was 8 of us. And I tell you, it was wonderful because while I had 2 wonderful parents that looked after me, I was my parents had 8 children. I was number 7. So I had 6 older brothers and sisters, and they absolutely looked after me as well. And that was very beneficial growing up in a very tough neighborhood.
What did your dad say to you specifically about being an African-American boy growing into a man?
He used to tell me that, you know, hey, look, it's tough being African-American. And first of all, you need to work hard. Because you need to work twice as hard as anyone else if you really plan to make it. And he also told me, hey, you got to be tough, son. You got to be tough. And he felt that in order to get out of an area like Jamaica, Queens, which is a very tough neighborhood, that, look, you got to be tough to get it, and you got to be tough to get out of this neighborhood. And he was very controlling, wanting to make sure that he did not expose the city to the elements. And because I tell you, for a very long time, we were not allowed to leave the yard. You know, our playground was the yard until we were old enough. He's like, okay. And I would say it was probably by the time I got to, I'm going to say, the 7th or 8th grade. Then at that point, then he's like, okay, if you want to go out to the park to play basketball, you go into the park to play basketball. But even then, it wasn't like, you know, for like, you know, 10 hours. It was like, look, you got 2 hours and you need to be back here. And it was simply trying not to expose us to the elements in the neighborhood, because he thought that was the best way to get out of the neighborhood, was not to allow us to be exposed to the elements in the neighborhood.
Looking back on it, do you agree with him?
You know, I do. I thought my dad was a little tough at times. But, you know, it's funny, Dr. Brewer, I'll share a story. I remember after I had went to college and came home, worked for Arthur Anderson, and I was living in Cincinnati, Ohio at the time, and taking the company public, and I would come back to New York about once a quarter to meet with investors and analysts on Wall Street to talk about the company's financial performance. And when I would come back, I would always come out to Queens, because I stayed in Manhattan. But I always come out to Queens and pick up my dad and take him to dinner while I was in town. And I remember taking him to dinner one night while I was in town, and I told Dad a story. I go, Dad, you know what? I never said this to you, but I want to say something to you. I go, remember when I was a young kid, this is probably Dr. Brewer, I'm going to say it was probably maybe the 7th grade, and we had a class had a basketball team. We had a basketball tournament, and we played in the tournament. And we had a semifinal game on one day, and I was supposed to be home by 5 o'clock, but the game went into overtime. And because it went into overtime, Dr. Brewer, I was late getting home. I got home at 5:05, and I remember when I walked in the house, my dad was in the kitchen. I walked in, and Dr. Brewer, you know, first of all, I'm excited, right, because we had an overtime game. We won, and by the way, Dr. Brewer, I hit the game when he shot, so. You know, and as a young man, I'm pretty excited.
Absolutely.
I got home. I walk, and I'm all excited, and I'm telling my dad. But I can see the look on his face. He's not looking very excited. It didn't hit me right away, Dr. Brewer. And I'm in the 7th grade. I'm excited. Until he finally said, "What time is it, son?" And I looked up at the clock on the wall, and it was 5:05. Then it hit me, Dr. Brewer. I'm like, "Oh, 5:05." He goes, "What time are you supposed to be home?" And I said, 5 o'clock. I go, "But Dad, the game went to overtime." So that's why it's a little later than usual. But I ran right home and I got in time. He goes, he goes, but son, always remember this, Dr. Brewer. His voice was, but 505 ain't five, is it, son? He was pretty strict. He's like, is it? I go, no, it's not. He goes, so you're grounded. I'm like, I'm grounded? And he's like, you're grounded. And I go, but the championship game is tomorrow. He's like, can I play tomorrow? He goes, no, you're grounded. You can't play. So I fast forward. We go to this dinner. Now, I mean, this is now I'm in my 30s. I relate this story to Dad while we're eating dinner at Sylvia's restaurant in Manhattan, the Soul Food restaurant. I go, Dad, you know, I never say anything to you about that. I go, but I really thought you was wrong there, right? I just thought that was wrong. So my dad looks at me. He goes, let me make sure I get this right. He goes, you live in Cincinnati. You're the CFO. Take the company public. You've come here. You go to Wall Street. You meet with guys on Wall Street. You bring me to Sylvia's restaurant. You're sitting with your French cuff shirts on, your French cuffs on, and you're going to tell me that I was wrong. I started laughing, Dr. Brewer. I'm like, you know what? Never mind that. I get your point. Never mind. And I guess the point was, hey, look, you know, I might not do anything right, but look, you know, the approach was fine. And he was right. The approach was fine. You know, I would not be sitting here today if it wasn't for the wonderful love and care that my parents and my brothers and sisters afforded me. I would not be here today. Now, was it a perfect existence? Absolutely not. And I tell people, but it never is. Right? But it was a fine and it was a good existence. And that got me here today.
And, you know, just the precision with which your father expected you to follow the rules, your success has been in part around your ability to be precise as you're looking at the numbers, as you're looking at the options, as you're looking at strategies moving forward. So, you know, Dad might have been more than a little bit right there.
I think you're right, Dr. Brewer. I can honestly, and I tell people, because, you know, it's funny, as I relate that story, people are like, oh, yeah, your dad was wrong there. And I'm like, I'm not going to get into whether he's wrong or right. What I will tell you is that he did what he thought he had to do, and that was all part of his plan to make sure I got out of that neighborhood. I go, you know what? And he was right. I go, you know, and Dr. Brewer, you make a good point. You know, as I told you the story earlier about when I was in the car and when I was struggling to recover, and Brenda told me just to trust God. I told people, I go, you know, she could have told me any number of things, right? She could have said, hey, Mark, you know what? You came from family of eight. You were the first one of your, in your family to graduate from college. You've gone on to, you know, raise billions of dollars, post-secondary education, right? Make companies, sell companies, you never went to ninth grade. All you have to do is work hard and you can get through this. But Dr. Brewer, she didn't say that. What she said was, trust God. And I tell people, that's the part that really struck me because, you know, it would have been easier to set up other things. Say, hey, look, Mark, you know, you're the first, you know, but she didn't. All she said was, you need to turn to your, and best, in essence, what she's telling me, I need to turn to my faith. And to your point, you know, my dad, I have tremendous respect for my dad and my mother. And I think I told you before, Dr. Brewer, at least I mentioned in the book, that, you know, Mom, you know, was wonderful. And it was Mom, as Mom was losing her battle with cancer. I didn't realize that at the time because I was still a very young man. I was my freshman in college, so not very, but still young. And I didn't realize that Mom was seriously ill. But I remember my last time I spoke to Dr. Brewer, I remember as I left to go back to the University of Buffalo, I remember my mother telling me, do me a favor, son. Look after your younger brother, because I was number seven, so that, I had a younger brother, a year younger. She said, look after him, and he was struggling in school. And then the next thing she told me goes, and be nice to Brenda. Because she had met Brenda. She thought she was very, very nice. She goes, you guys be nice to each other up there in Buffalo. And, you know, Dr. Brewer, yeah, I tell people, I didn't realize at the time, but there was one, I think, was her way of saying goodbye. Cause she knew she was seriously ill.
Yeah.
And it was her way of delivering me a message saying, look, here's what I need you to do, son.
And clearly she was giving Brenda the mom stamp of approval.
Yes. But to your point, you know, I had a wonderful childhood. And I tell people, look, not perfect. And I tell everyone, right. I go, look, I'm not going to tell you it was perfect because it wasn't perfect, right? But you know, because, but we got to get off that. Things aren't perfect, right?
Exactly.
Life isn't perfect. It is not, you know. And we have to accept that. It should be good, but it doesn't have to be perfect. And I had a wonderful, wonderful childhood. I had two wonderful, loving parents that, you know, while they didn't have money, gave us what we needed, which they provided food and clothing and love and took us to church. And for that, I'm grateful, and I sit here today understanding everything they've done for me.
At one point, Mark, you were talking about your earlier work history, and you sort of threw in Arthur Andersen. And you and I both know, and a lot of people who are listening know, that getting a position at Arthur Andersen was not a piece of cake. And on top of it, quite frankly, you are African American, and that made it even more challenging, perhaps, to be there. But in a lot of ways, that was just the beginning, because you have found yourself in lots of situations where I suspect there are not many people who look like you doing what you do at the level that you do. So I say all that to say, you were clear about who Mark Moore was in that life. You were living it, and you were living it well. And then Mark Moore was a very different person. And you talked about grieving Mark. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, you know, and Dr. Boudet is well said, and you're absolutely correct. And all those things, you know, I was unbelievably fortunate and loved the fact that I went to the University of Buffalo and was recruited off campus to work for Arthur Andersen. As you all know, Dr. Brewer, it was a wonderful opportunity for a 21-year-old man of any color to be working for, at that time, probably the best public accounting firm in the country.
Yes.
It was absolutely, and for me, it was a wonderful breeding ground and learning ground, and learned a lot of things, right? And my life was going quite well. But, you know, as I went through this process, I realized that, you know what, and I tell people all the time, when you recover from, certainly in my case, recovering from two strokes, it's almost like starting over. You've got to forget the old things. We use a term, the new norm. Everything's new. Everything's different. You know, when I get in the car now to drive, Dr. Brewer, it doesn't feel like it used to. You know, it's a different feeling. You know, when I sit to write checks now, it's a different feeling, right? And I tell people, I can still do the same things I did before. The only difference is, you know, because of the fact that I had two strokes, and what happens, Dr. Brewer, and I'll leave some facts here for our audience, because it's important that if you're having a stroke, to get to the doctor as soon as possible, because they believe every minute we delay in getting to the hospital when you're having a stroke, you lose 1 million brain cells a minute, Dr. Brewer. I mean, it's an incredible number. So it can certainly bring about significant brain damage. And I tell people, look, you know, I had two strokes. Did I suffer brain damage? Absolutely. Now, some of those cells can repair itself, and the brain will rewire itself. And so I tell people, look, from my standpoint, I can do everything today that I did prior to the two strokes. The only difference is it takes me just a nanosecond longer to do those things. So when I talk about driving, you know, I drive today, and I know a lot of stroke victims don't drive. And they ask me, how do I do it? And I'm like, look, guys, you know, first of all, one, by the grace of God. And the second thing, I've accepted where I am. And the fact of the matter is, I'm not looking for that old feeling when I used to drive, because it's gone. This is a new norm, you know. Now I realize that I can drive, and to recognize things, it may take, it's a nanosecond longer than it used to. Now, people say, well, a nanosecond, that's not a big deal. But Dr. Brewer, you know, when you live it, that's a big deal.
Right.
A nanosecond, it seems like 5 minutes, but it's just a nanosecond. And one of the things I did, and I want listeners to understand this, you know, Dr. Brewer, when I was doing all these companies, I remember I did one in South Carolina. And, you know, these are all these high-tech firms, you know, back in an age of, you know, the whole, you know, kind of Silicon Valley and high-tech firms. And the CEO at the time, when we came in, he brought in the management team, he wanted everyone to go take psychological testing. And they did IQ testing. And I remember going down, and the gentleman did the psychological testing, the IQ testing. And I remember the guy telling me, "Hey, Mark, your IQ score was 140. Now, Dr. Brewer, I'm from Jamaica, Queens, right? Yeah, I'll be honest. That didn't really mean anything to me, right?" And I'm like, "Okay, I don't know what that means, but okay." And he goes, "No," he goes, that's a very good one." He goes, that's an intelligent IQ." And I'm like, "Okay, well, again, I've always done well in school." I go, "So I guess that makes sense." But I fast forward, Dr. Brewer, after suffering the two strokes, and remember, I had my own business, my partner, and I wanted to go back to work. But I was concerned. I didn't want to go back. If I wasn't the guy that I used to be, I'll be honest, I did not. And I didn't want to go back and manage. We had 125 employees. I probably had about, you know, at that time, 10 direct reports and half the company underneath my uterus. I did not want to go back if I was not capable of doing a quality job. So, Dr. Brewer, I went and took that IQ test again, and the score was 140. And I tell people, here's the point. I go, "Guys, oh, I had brain damage." I go, make no mistake about that. But the brain will rewire itself. And if you give yourself that nanosecond longer, you can get to the same answer. You just have to accept the fact that it's not what it used to be. And to your point, you know, we use the term, it's the new norm, right? You know,
absolutely.
It's starting over.
And you know, the point that you continue to make, which is that the brain can rewire itself, is truly yet another miracle. But it is one that we all really do have to remember. Mark, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, I'd like for you to give us more of the sort of the facts and the figures around the experience of having a stroke and moving forward.
Will do.
Folks, we will be back in just a moment to continue this conversation with Mark Moore, author of A Stroke of Faith, a stroke survivor's story of a second chance at living a life of significance. We'll return. In talking to the listeners about the fact of having a stroke, you talk about the fast response. Can you go through that?
Certainly. American Heart Association has an acronym they use called FAST, F-A-S-T. The F stands for facial drooping. The A stands for arm weakness. And the S stands for speech difficulty. And what they tell people is if you find yourself experiencing any of those, or if you find loved ones or you experience any of those, then you want to immediately go to the T. And the T stands for time to call 911, F-A-S-T, FAST. And that gets back to our early discussion, Dr. Brewer, that what they found is that it's vitally important to get to the hospital as soon as possible because every second we waste is critical, as I mentioned. You know, they estimate that you will lose 1 million brain cells a minute if you delay getting to the hospital to get treatment for a stroke.
So hindsight really is brilliant, and deciding to coach a group of 15-year-olds for 2 hours is not the best first course of action.
No, that was not. That was not, absolutely not. But, you know, Dr. Brewer, you said something. And, you know, as I've gone through this process, and I've learned a lot, and I've learned this FAST acronym, and I've learned that, you know, as you mentioned earlier, you know, 800,000 people suffer a stroke every year. Now, that equates to, and I think you mentioned this earlier, every 40 seconds, someone in this country is having a stroke. Every 4 minutes, someone in this country dies from a stroke. Now, the good news is 80% of strokes are preventable if people are willing to focus on things like monitoring blood pressure, monitoring cholesterol levels, stop smoking, really don't be excessive in alcohol, drinking, exercise, monitoring the diabetes, and avoiding obesity. So those we can, that, and that gets to the fact that 80% of strokes are preventable. If we can monitor those things, that's how we control that 80%. Another thing, Dr. Brewer, African Americans are twice as likely to suffer strokes as other races. Now, we don't know why, but and a lot of it, there's a lot of reasons, some of it socioeconomic, but twice as likely, and people need to know that. And strokes are the number one cause of adult disability in this country. And I like to mention that, Dr. Brewer, because we spend a lot of time talking about stroke prevention. But the fact of the matter is, the issue comes with quality of life. And as I've gone around this country and I've been fortunate enough, the people ask me to come around and talk about my experience and my recovery. I was 46 when I had my stroke. I've met people, Dr. Brewer, that was 36 and 26 that had strokes. And the issue really becomes quality of life. You got a 26 or a 36-year-old person probably have another 60, 50 years on this earth. And they would like to have a decent quality of life. And those are things we really need to focus on and help people with.
The statistics that you cite, every 40 seconds, someone has a stroke. Every 4 minutes, there is a death related to a stroke. Those are really astounding statistics. And clearly what your story reminds all of us is that there's no guarantee that you or someone close to you won't have this experience.
That is correct. And it's funny you said there's no guarantee. And I tell people, look, I was 46. I didn't have high cholesterol. I didn't have high blood pressure. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I exercise. I'm not obese. And I wasn't diabetic. And yet it happened. Now once it happens, a stroke is a stroke, Dr. Bear, right? My symptoms and my ability to recover the deficits, it's the same as people who had those illnesses, who had the high cholesterol and the high blood pressure. It's the same. But having said that, these are things we can control. And I tell people, look, I didn't have them and I still have stroke. If you can control those things, you need to do that. And, it's important because that 80% of strokes are preventable. You will know, Dr. Brewer, that's a high number. And that is something we absolutely can control. We need to do, we need to try to eradicate strokes in this country as best we can. And this is something, I think you mentioned it earlier, Dr. Brewer, this is something we can control. So let's try to control this.
Mark, tell us what your life is like today as we speak. What's going on?
Oh, well, again, I sit on six not-for-profit boards, and I choose just to sit on not-for-profit boards because after suffering that stroke in 2007, Dr. Brewer, I was able to go back to work after 3.5 months, and what I want the listeners to know is that less than a year after suffering those two strokes, I ran a 5K in downtown D.C., and I tell people, I ran it in 36 minutes. So you can recover and you can lead a normal life. I went back to work and my partner and I, we sold our business in 2010 and I hung around to 2012 and then I retired in 2012. My wife and I created a family foundation just a way of trying to give back. We realized we've been very, very blessed and very fortunate where we are. And we sit on boards. I sit on five not-for-profit boards, including the Apollo Theater, Inova Hospital, Inova Health System here in Northern Virginia, and the Kennedy Center's National Symphony Orchestra, just to name a few. And it's just my way of trying to give back. Our family foundation is focused on healthcare, education, arts and culture, and Christian evangelism. So those are the areas we try to give back to.
The commitment that you have to working with others to help others, would you say that that was a part of Mark Moore prior to the stroke, or would you say that there's a new appreciation for that now?
Why I certainly would help people prior to strokes, not to this level, because the fact of that is, had I not had those strokes, Dr. Brewer, I probably would still be creating companies and building businesses and selling businesses. It was only because of my experience in 2007 that I then realized, you know what, I don't want to do that anymore, right? As I remember, to excellent question, Dr. Brewer, when I sold the business and then I retired, all of my friends looked at me and said, "Ah, man, you're going to stop another business. I give you 6 months, and then you'll stop another company." And I never did, Dr. Brewer. And, you know, so now it's been 5 years. So now my friends, they go, "You know, I really thought you were going to stop." And I understand that. And you're absolutely right. You should have thought that, because that was the old mark. I go, if you'd have said anything other than, I go, then you didn't know me. Because the fact of the matter is, the experience of 2007, it changes your life. And I realized, and what I tell people is, look, for 30 years I did that. If the good Lord's going to allow me to live another 30 years, I want to do something back. And I want to give back. And I want to make a difference in other folks' lives. I realize I've been so fortunate. And to your point, Dr. Brewer, you know, look, in 2007, they weren't sure I was going to even live. And if I did live, there was no guarantee what kind of quality of life I was going to have. Only did I live, you know, Dr. Brewer, I have a wonderful life. I told you, you know, the recovery has been wonderful. I ran the 5K. I do all the things today that I did prior. And I really want to make a difference in other folks' lives, because I realize how fortunate I've been.
Mark, we touched on a little bit ago the impact that this kind of experience can have on a family connection, on a marital connection. And certainly in today's world, where very often, if there even is a marriage, a long-term marriage is maybe a year or two, maybe. You and your wife have been together since school, since grade school. What would you say you and your wife have been able to create within your marriage that has kept the two of you so connected and so loving for so many years?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I would say, first of all, a partnership, because, you know, it's a part of that when we were married. You know, I did things that I would come on and I would tell her, but I didn't make her part of the process. I think that after going through this experience, we realized that, you know, a wife is a partner. You need to make her part of the process. And to the point there, Dr. Brewer, you said that one example I'll tell you. When I got sick, as I was in the hospital in a coma, and after I woke up, I remember my wife, she was sitting there, and she goes, "Hey, you didn't tell me you brought a private plane." And my partner and I, we had purchased our ownership in a private aircraft to help us go around to sell the DOD agencies that we were supporting. And we had did that, but, you know, I never even mentioned it to my wife. Right? Now, it wasn't a huge thing, but the fact that I should at least have mentioned it to her. So when she said it to me, I remember laying in bed, I'm like, you know what? I didn't mention that to you. And now I will tell you, that would never happen today. And that's part of just making it a partnership and making your wife a part of the process, and likewise your wife making you a part of the process. And so as I went through this recovery, as I told you earlier, Dr. Brewer, she treated my stroke as if it was our stroke, right? You know, when I went to rehab, she was there every time. You know, as I tried to prepare for that 5K run, she was like, take me to the gym and walk with me and sitting there and reading books and listening to her iPod. She simply became, and I would tell listeners, it's important that both the husband and wife become part of the process. And be partners, not a wife, not be partners. Make her part of the process.
What would you say is your greatest gift to your children?
You know, I would say, first of all, my faith. And I really want them to realize that if you're willing to surrender and place your trust and faith in God, then you know what? If it's His will, right? Because that's always the preface. Because we don't know if it's His will, amazing things can happen. And what I tell people, while I was willing to quit on myself back then, you know, what I realized that, you know what, you know, God was not willing to quit on me. And He kept sending other people to tell me, hey, Mark, keep working. You know, I got a plan for you. So I think the what I want to show my kids is that, look, have faith, have something to believe in, you know, and it really is very, very important. And it helped me through this process.
At one point during your recovery, one of your therapists was saying to you, reminding you that you had, in fact, had a brain injury, but that they would help retrain you, that your brain cells had been scarred, but there was a way to recover. In that moment, at that time, did you believe what you were hearing?
No, I really didn't, because you're right. As I was going through my physical therapy, she was asking me all these questions about what do you go to undergrad school and where you go to grad school and what you do in Arthur Anderson. And I remember thinking, Dr. Brewer, what is this? Why are you asking these questions? The reason she was asking the question because she was like trying to ascertain what level of education that I had. She goes, Mark, we're going to work to get you back there. She goes, and I didn't believe it at the time, but they absolutely did, Dr. Brewer. They absolutely did. You know, to be able to take an IQ test and to score the same thing I had, years ago, speaks to the fact that the brain, first of all, Dr. Brewer, we don't understand everything about the brain, all right? Even today, we just do not. But the brain can rewire itself, and it can repair some of those scarred brain cells. And I think in my case, a lot of this rewiring went on, right? Which is probably why things feel different, right? Which we talk about the new norm. You know, I'm getting to the same point. It just feels a little different. I think the brain does a rewiring to get you there.
So the new norm is not a bad norm. It's just a new norm. That's all.
It's just a new norm. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mark, how can people find out more information about your book and about the things you're doing?
I have a website called strokeoffaith.com. It talks about where I'm going around the country, speaking engagements. And Dr. Brewer, I write blogs which detail some of the things that I've experienced that try to help other people as they go through it. So absolutely tell them to please visit strokeoffaith.com. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter under author Mark Moore.
Okay. And that's Mark, M-A-R-K, Moore, M-O-O-R-E.
That is correct.
All right. Mark, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. And thank you for choosing to share your life. And thank you for choosing to live a life of great significance.
Thank you for the opportunity, Dr. Brewer. I do appreciate it.
Folks, this is Pamela Brewer thanking you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical or mental health or other professional. Mind Talk is available to you on demand by going to mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.ORG. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. I would love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to this edition of Mind Talk. So please send an email to me at Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. And just a reminder, that's MYNDTALK.org. And another reminder, you've been listening to a conversation with Mark Moore, who is the author of A Stroke of Faith, A Stroke Survivor's Story of a Second Chance at Living a Life of Significance. And remember, too, if it's unacceptable, that's what it is, unacceptable. You take care.